This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Can each of you talk about getting contacted by Paul and how many seconds did it take to agree to do this?
You can go first.
Well, he sent me the script, and I read it and thought, well, I don't have time to do this, and told him, and then he asked me again, and the schedule cleared up, and I started thinking about it at that point and realized that the movie's about something and has some originality to it, and it was time to go to work anyway, so I thought, what better thing to do? It was appealing.
Okay. I got the script, and Tommy Lee was attached to it already, and I thought, well, that's brilliant, but I don't know what to do with this part, because at that time it was even less than what it is now.
Well, it wasn't any good first. It was kind of thin.
Yeah, I just didn't know what to do with it, and I said, I really think you're missing the voice of this wife. I don't, I've had a lot of contact with women who've lost kids, because I've been dealing a lot with the vets, and I'm not quite sure what to do with it. And so he came back and he wrote a little bit more. And actually, there was another scene that was cut eventually. But I just thought it was a great opportunity. I thought Tommy Lee was an excellent choice, and it was going to be really, it was smart and an interesting way to get into some of this kind of a dialogue, and that it was a film that really should be made. And it was just a short period of time, and the last time I spent any time with Tommy Lee was also in Memphis, so I felt incredibly nostalgic about that.
It was a very thin role on paper, and Susan did some work with the screenwriter and was able to fill it up and make it real and worthwhile. For everybody, I hope for her as well.
Do you think that the story was thin in part because there's still so many uncertainties about this particular war
Well, the way to respond to that is to say that this movie is about something that all Americans have in common. If you have not been to Iraq and come back, you're kin to somebody who has. And if you haven't been and come back, and if you're not kin to anybody who has, you know somebody who has. And you read about it in the paper every day, and it's in the front of everybody's mind. So it's about something that we all have in common. I think that's the real answer to the question you are wanting to ask.
I think there's also, it's just time to acknowledge that war, especially of this nature, really changes people. And you're never the same, however that manifests itself. And there really has been a dialogue that's been about a politicized war, but not that much dialogue about the actual war and what it really costs. And so this is a great place to start. It doesn't have the answers, but it poses some questions, and it is a specific story that actually happened, and it's a nice way to just to start to try to begin a dialogue that deals with some real issues and some problems and huge numbers of people that are coming back that are changed by this experience, which we would like to not think about.
Well, can you talk a little bit about what inspired your characters, how you created the characters, the research that you did? Because it rings very authentic.
Well, there's a good documentary called The Ground Truth that we looked at a couple of times, and then there was an episode on 48 Hours about this particular family upon which the movie is loosely based. We watched that a few times, and then other than that, we just you just read the script and make sure that you're prepared. And do your best to relate freely and openly with the people you work with. Research is pretty loose term when it comes to preparing to act in a movie, unless you're playing a rocket scientist or an oil painter or a composer of music. Then I don't know what you'd do.
I mean, the end of the day, you have to just make it work. And, you know, there's so many stories in so many different ways that these people can be, even though the real people were actually there for a while. It's not a documentary. And so, you know, I've met a lot of mothers that have lost kids because on Mother's Day I was in D.C. and delivering letters to Laura from the moms that had lost kids and the moms that had kids there. And, you know, I've certainly heard a lot of stories. And so, you know, I mean, you can steep yourself, but finally the end of the day, you have to try to figure out what just makes this particular storytelling work and hope that if you make it as specific as possible to the story, it will be universal in its ramifications. But you basically just have to drop whatever the particulars were and try to make the scenes work, and you know, in whatever way. Paul's had a very specific vision when he, you know, he's not somebody that's all improvisational and all over the place. He definitely has something in mind when he starts. So I think you.
So research is a pretty loose term. It's hard to apply, unless you can think about an actress of Susan's abilities, and think of that looking somebody in the face is research.
Well, when we did The Client, a lot of that needed to be fleshed out, and we talked to lawyers, and we came up with some specific things to make those scenes work because it was kind of a lot of attituding. So sometimes it helps to find out actually the specific problems or what you could threaten each other with if it's not there.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
How to talk like a lawyer. That's one. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, the deepest research we do is just looking you in the eye and finding out who you are.
And how difficult was it to do those scenes on the phone together? Were either of you on the other line? Was it just someone else reading the things?
He called me at my house. I wasn't even there yet. I was sobbing in my bedroom, and my kids were saying, "Are you all right? Are you all right?" Because they didn't know what was going on, because he did his side first. This was before I even came there. So I wasn't even sure if I was speaking with the right accent.
Yeah. I wondered if, you know, how she was able to go through all of that heartbreak right there instantly. And she said, "We lost a basketball game." So it really, it's all about a basketball game.
Can you talk about the what it was about your respective characters which appealed to you, and what it is about them which you hope will reach out to other people?
Personally, I've already touched on that. I think is this fellow's experience is something that we all share and that we all have in common.
I think it wasn't. It's not so much the character. I just wanted to be part of the attempt of whatever this movie's trying to do, and luckily, it came at a time when I could go away for 10 days or whatever, and all the people involved were really, you know, grade A, and so I thought it's worth a shot. But it wasn't so much the, you know, the character. I mean, those scenes, everybody had scenes that were kind of demanding at some point, but I just thought everybody that's involved, I mean, look at James Franco's in it and small parts. I mean, I think people, you know, actors do that. I mean, certainly none of us were doing it for the money. Were you doing it for the money?
No, there was a cafe in White. You'll like this. We were our trailers were parked on Martin Luther King Boulevard in Whiteville, Tennessee, and around the corner there was a place called the Dove of Paradise Cafe, and really what made the whole trip worthwhile were the pork chops and the greens.
Some good music there too.
Yeah, pretty good music.
Outside of Memphis, I went to a club. It was really good.
I don't get out very much. I remember y'all went.
It was at the very end of the shoot. I just got a call from Drew telling me that the old guy's club it was died, and her widow wanted me to know. I just got a message on my service.
Oh.
Yeah.
Was it down on Mud Island?
It was outside of Memphis. I have no idea where I was. It was once we went back.
Oh, it was outside
of
Memphis.
No, it was right outside of the city. It wasn't when we were on location. Although I did get a lot of homemade fudge and some moonshine. Gave me. I got a lot of presents there.
So now you're really understanding what acting is all about. Pork chops and moonshine. Yeah.
It's the perks. It's the...
Could you talk a little bit about Paul as a director? And just, you know, is he very... Is he very demanding? Is he very in your face? Is he very... Just as him as a director.
By the time I got to him, he's worn down. I was at the very end. He was, you know, much more laid back than he was for the first month.
Yeah, he got tired. You know, he's finding his way as a director, figuring out how to work. He wants to feel secure, and this sometimes drives him to shoot more takes than he needs to. And that can get to be a drain. The results wind up being more than satisfactory, but the road to the results are understandably more twisty and windy and rocky than sometimes they need to be. If that makes sense.
In terms of takes, what? For both of you, are you the types of actors that feel you can get it pretty quickly, or is it you know, sometimes does a scene require more work? It's usually pretty quick.
Well, and go ahead, Susan.
No, I think it is, unless you're struggling over problem with the scene. I remember Louis Ma said, whenever you ask to smoke in a scene, I know something's written badly. Because if you feel hung up and you're not clear on who's pitching and who's catching, then I think you get into some complicated areas. But if it's organic to what's going on and you know your words and everything, I don't think that it's, I don't think doing 30 takes necessarily makes you better. Then it's time to really have a talk. I think, maybe one or two to loosen up, and then. But I find that I'm better at the beginning, and you know, if you keep doing it, unless you're saying really specifically change something, I get pissed off.
As a director and actor with some years of experience, I can tell you how it ought to go. And as far as I'm concerned, there's no argument. Everybody, and you've got to have 100 people, let's say. Everybody has to be ready to get it right on the first take, every time. Whatever it takes to be ready to get it right the first time is what everybody's job is. The second take is for security, so that you have a backup. And in the event of some glitch in the photographic process, and the third take is for fun. It's what I call the third take is what I call, in, as a director, the NRT, which is the no rules take. Everything you've learned throughout rehearsal, everything you did on the first take, everything you did on the second take, is simply grist for the mill. And the third take is no holds barred. And if you go to the fourth take, somebody might have made a mistake. And so you go ahead on. By the fifth take, you should be moving, leaving the scene of the crime.
Well, what do you think when you hear of directors like Stanley Kubrick? He used to work their actors like 50 takes.
I just worked with his first AD on Speed Racer and the stories. That's crazy. I mean, I think then that's some kind of power trip of trying to wear people down, or else you're not clear. I mean, the worst thing is when somebody says perfect and then you do it again. I mean, like, why would it be perfect if they just ask you to do it 10 more times? No, I think that's a bit of a wank. I think it's not really, unless it's a very complicated shot and somebody, you know, there's a focus problem or something, that's not your fault. But that's why it really takes everybody. You're so dependent on the other people that do their jobs to try to get. I always try to talk to the focus puller and say, this is what I'm doing. And, you know, I mean, if it was really like Demi Walken or something, but this is what's going to happen. I mean, I know a lot of these guys by now. And so they're working all together to get the same feeling. But I don't know why people would ask you to do 35, 40 takes. That's just insane.
Could you talk about you guys' character, the wife and the husband? So the mostly there in this film, you guys part totally. You know, there is no physical close scene mostly at all. So what did you guys discuss to establish kind of bonds, kind of long time marriage?
I don't know. We just acted like actors. That's about all. I don't know if we didn't have a lot. We
a
talked
lot of
mostly
sex
about
in the trailer. We're not going to talk
about
that.
Yeah, no, don't say anything about that. We were talking about pork chops and moonshine, basically, is what it
was. I mean, it helped that we have a history together of having struggled through the client and spent some time, which was many years ago, and so now here we are again. So in a way, I mean, I think the familiarity helped, but... you know, when you're with somebody, they must have been together 20-some years, you know, coming up on a 20-year anniversary myself, you know, it's a different kind of, you maybe aren't all cuddly, I think that the fact that they, it's a different thing, I think it would have been, I mean, there was one scene which was cut where I thought was a little bit more kind towards each other, the one in the truck that didn't end up in the movie, I don't think.
I don't know, I didn't,
yeah, the cut that I saw, it's not there when I say come home and everything, you know, I mean, I think that, these are people that are good friends with each other and even more than, you know, romantically involved at this point, having already lost one child. I don't even know what that did to them. So it is a very odd time to come into this relationship.
Tommy, you had said, or actually Susan had said earlier that she had spoken with various women who had lost sons in the war and so forth. And I was just wondering, for this character who increasingly feels more guilty about the fact that he may share some responsibility for what happened to his second son, was there any opportunity for you to either talk to some fathers who had lost sons in the war, either this war or any other one?
Not really. I spoke briefly to a gentleman named Lanny on whom the story is loosely based. I looked at a couple of documentaries, interviews of kids coming back, and I did as much thinking as I knew how to do, but I didn't really interview or visit with a lot of people. The movie's based on human experience, so, I mean, if you know how to act in front of and around a movie camera and you've been an observant student of life, it doesn't take you long to figure out how to play a couple that's been married for 30 years and has lost two children to war. It doesn't take long to figure that out.
Your character could either be very, very, you know, aggressive and angry and outwardly angry and everything, And yet he's very still, very methodical, and I think probably it has something to do with the fact that he was a military police officer, and that kind of comes into play. So just kind of the very stoic outward appearance.
Those things are indicated in the screenplay, and so you think of as many different ways as you can to portray them accurately, according to what the director indicates he wants to see.
When I think of the two of you in casting movies, I think, yes, about the story, but I also think about what I think you're going to deliver in your performance. Does it feel that way to you? Do you feel like you carry that responsibility when you're attached to a project, that there is an expectation of you as Academy Award winners and as people who have repeatedly given good performances?
Not till I see the poster, and then it has it on the top. Tommy Lee Jones, Academy Award winner. Shelley's there on Academy Award winner. Susan Sarandon, Academy Award winner. No, I don't think like that. I mean, I think this is a job. It's different than anything else I've done. How can I best take the script? And you give it your all, and you hope they distribute it, and you hope that they find a way to get it to people. And, you know, but I go into, after all these years, I go into it more for the process than what's going to happen afterwards, because just too many times my heart's been broken when you work and work on something, and then, you know, they decide for whatever reasons not to stand by it, and so you never know how. I mean, not that you hope that it'll find people that want to see it. You don't necessarily think it's going to be a blockbuster, but you hope that the studio will at least leave it in the theater for more than a weekend, and sometimes it doesn't happen, especially these days. The distribution thing is really crazy. So I think more about, you know, I just try to focus on what's going to happen at that time and what I'll learn and the people that I'll meet and the process of doing it, you know, really.
There's the best, the most fun you have, the greatest joy in cinema is the privilege of shooting them.
Yeah.
That's what's the most fun. I don't go to the picture show all that often, I got to be honest with you. I sure do like making them.
Susan, could you talk about working with the Wachowski brothers and filming in Berlin and also the new camera that they're using?
I love the Wachowski brothers. Basically, all I do is make pancakes in the movie and stand around serving breakfast to everybody. So
what camera
pretty humbling.
What's
they're
the camera?
Using some new high-def thing that comes with guards, and it's beyond anything I've ever seen. I saw 10 minutes before I left. They did a special little thing for me because they're just wrapping, having a party tonight, and they're still, you know, they were working after I left, and they're doing something where they're layering film so that the front and the back are in focus like a cartoon, and they're also doing two-dimensional, three-dimensional stuff and mixing, and everything's very, very saturated so that with some new kind of film. So they have to actually treat the actors in some way so we can hold our own with the background. So it's everything, every color that wasn't in The Matrix is seriously in this film.
The camera comes with guards, like the jewelry at Cannes on the women.
Yeah. It's some, I mean, when I talked to them on the phone, I'd never met them when they asked me to do it, and I had two conversations because it's a very small part, and it was a very long commitment because of the way they were shooting this. And at a certain point, I just said, I don't have the faintest idea what you're talking about. I'm in, you know, because I just thought, when am I going to get a chance to be, you know, up to my neck in something that I understand so little about? And they definitely fulfilled my expectation. But they have two big, huge widescreen things. Plus, it's at the end of the day, you can see everything the way it's going to be before it's treated. And they have guys, they have a room of 200 or 300 guys that are doing all the backgrounds. It's insane. And we were shooting on four stages, and it was really interesting and really lovely experience. All the actors were great. I was working with a monkey. I mean, sorry, chimpanzee. He doesn't like to be called a monkey, a chimp. And it was wild, and they're very, very sweet and have complete control. Every director's dream, you know, to not have, I mean, just to have complete control of your product.
What's the movie about?
It's a cartoon called Speed Racer that they're now making into a movie, and the story is about is John Goodman and I are mom and pops, and he makes racing cars, and it's about the corruption of sports by corporations. And how, and of course, while we're doing it, all these horrible things were happening in the sports world, including the racing world. But it's all about cheating and betting and how things are fixed and everything else. But it's also about family values and pancakes are love, I think.
There's a lot of talk that it might be rated G. Are they still going for that kind of a rating?
Yeah.
We have time for one more question.
Tommy, speaking about movies that we assume that you enjoyed working on, can you talk about working with the Coen brothers on No Country for Old Men and what that experience was like?
Well, it was a lot of fun. I stayed in Tusuki, which is a little town across the highway from the Opera House north of Santa Fe. And I really liked Tusuki. It's the third time I've stayed in that house. And I had a great time. I like Santa Fe a great deal. Most of the work was done in... we also worked in far west Texas, where I'm very much at home. And then we moved out there and did a lot of shooting in Albuquerque. It's a very difficult place to shoot because it's so noisy. Airplanes flying over and people changing tires with ratchet wrenches, you know, and crows, and radios, and truck horns, just about any objectionable noise you can think of is going to be in the air in Albuquerque. Joel and Ethan are easiest people in the world to work with. They don't really have a lot to say. I mean, they're very well prepared. All their work is on the page, and they're those three and four take type of guys that know what the hell they're doing, and you know, they methodically start at the beginning, proceed through the middle, and when they come to the end, they actually stop.
There's something fabulous working with two people directing. You know, I didn't know how that would work, but I know them. I haven't worked for them, too. But, you know, directing is so lonely, and there's so much pressure on you because you're making all these, having lived with a few directors, not this one, but other ones, you know, you're making all you do is make decisions when you're not trying to keep your actors from, you know, having meltdowns. And so when you see people that have somebody else to bounce idea off of, that they really finish each other's sentences and they know what, I think it must be very reassuring because you don't have that anxiety of did we get it, you know, that you know that someone's always on your back. And I wasn't sure how that would work. I thought, well, do they both talk to you? And it was so seamless. It was really fabulous.
Oh, they're really smart, and they're polite.
Mm.
And they have, you know, broad and generous minds. I mean, when I get through directing and I go home and my wife asks me for what I want for lunch, I break out in a cold sweat and I, you know, refuse. Don't make me make a decision. Get away from me with this lunch stuff.
Thank you.
Well, I'm planning on it.
Yeah.
If,
do you have a project in mind?
Yes, I do. If all my dreams come true,
yeah,
we'll be starting very soon.
Nothing you can talk about yet, thanks.